Broadcasted live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Welcome to Point of View. My name is Pimelo Mutine, and we're going to be together until 10, this being our very final show of the year. So we're looking forward to that. Leroy will still be here. We'll have a little bit of Dr. Sheldon as well. But we start with a very important conversation with the Minister of Energy and Electricity in the country, Minister, who very graciously agreed to come into studio, Dr. Khosiyenzo Ramkgopa. Thank you so much for your time. Welcome to Kaya.
Oh, thank you very much, Pimelo, and thanks for the invitation. And good evening to the listeners back at home.
Good evening to you. So obviously we're going to touch on many things, but Eskom annual results announcement today was the big story of the day. I mean, I must say that we all felt your dissatisfaction and disappointment at the late publishing of the results. That obviously bringing other issues into the fold, the JSE warning that, look, if they don't come through, they will have to stop, trading on bonds, on Eskom bonds and so on. You did state that you were disappointed about that. And you also said, I mean, obviously there are reasons, but they are still disappointing nonetheless.
Oh, yes, absolutely correct. I think one of the things that we want to uphold is good governance. Of course, the primary preoccupation over the past 18 months or so was to ensure that they were able to generate sufficient capacity megawatts to meet the demand. But I always said to Eskom that we've got multiple tracks and we need to pursue these things simultaneously. So it's not one over the other. I mean, if you listen to some of the submissions during the public hearing in relation to the proposed tariff application by Eskom, some of the things that have been coming to the fore from general public organized business was the need for transparency, a better understanding of how Eskom arrives at the price determination. And for you, the primary basis of examining and interrogating Eskom's claims in relation to the cost of electricity generation is audited financial statement. Yeah. We have an obligation to the country and the members of parliament for them to interrogate these numbers. It does two things. First is to ensure that there's levels of accountability, and secondly, it enhances, if you like, the performance of Eskom going forward. Because as you get to be interrogated, of course, you are going to find that there are limitations, there are deficits, there are areas that requires attention, and of course, you are going to pull up your socks and ensure that you deliver on your mandate as an efficient generator of electricity in the country. Of course, there are valid reasons that the board had advanced. That notwithstanding, I think it's important that we are able to register as a shareholder, one, our disappointment, two, express our apology to the South African people, and thirdly, ensure that Eskom going forward keeps to those requirements. I think those requirements are non-negotiable. They are there for a reason, and it can also undermine our ability of listing on the JSE, the point we have made in relation to our bond, our capacity to finance our capital requirements going into the future, just the market confidence. So yes, accept that we are at a place that we don't want to be, but I see that there's a commitment to ensure that there's improvement going forward.
Do you want to touch on the reasons given by the board?
Well, the first one has to do with there has been established that there are challenges in relation to, I mean, what you call these tokens that get to be issued for prepaid meters. There's a reason to believe that there's been fraud. And in fact, that fraud could also be orchestrated from within. So first, you needed to understand the extent of that leakage and, of course, the extent of the fraud. We must be able to account for that appropriately, and that's why there was a need for us to be able to look into those. And then the third one was the issues that had to do with the assets, the ones transferred to the National Transmission Company, South Africa. I'm sure you know about the unbundling. So there are issues that the audit issues that they required the attention of both boards and convergence by both boards because it got implications in relation to, if you like, the audit findings on both the main Eskom and also on the NTCSA. And those issues took a bit of time for them to be resolved. So the point I'm making is that, yes, those are reasons that are understandable, but they're acceptable, no. And that's the point I want to make. So you understand why you are here.
Yeah.
Acceptable, no. I think that we need to raise the bar. And this must not subtract from the tremendous work that ESCOM has registered. And I'm sure we'll get an opportunity to reflect on that. But I think governance is key. I think it's important that throughout this journey of recovery, resetting the work of ESCOM, we're also able to ensure that we maintain the buy and maintain it very high. I am more than confident about the ability of the new leadership management led by Group CEO Mr. Dan Marokani and also the board led by Dr. Mteto that we're going to lift the bar. But I think it's important that we accept where we have dropped the ball and ensure that we correct going into the future.
A couple of things have to happen all at the same time.
Yes.
In order for us to get to a point there where we're almost comfortable, where you, well, not yourself as the shareholder, but as ESCOM, you know, they cannot keep going back to Treasury asking for more money.
Yes.
We were told that, you know, what would be comfortable would be around 15 billion a year, not more than that. But that's obviously a long way from now. But we are now looking at tariffs. Your request with NERSA, that engagement is still happening. You're worried about the poor, the indigent families. But there's a very strange section of the population which can pay,
yes,
which is not paying,
yes, yes,
which is almost creating a burden,
yes,
to all of the other customers that are compliant. There's obviously the municipal debt, which is not coming down. And when you look at, you know, the trend, it doesn't seem to be moving any better. When you forecast what's happening there, there are no real resolutions. You've come in, you've already given us a sense that, you know, there will be a payment plan of sort when you look at, for instance, the city of Johannesburg and other municipalities. But that's a kind of problem that is bigger than ESCOM, is bigger than you, even in your ministry. How do you suggest it's addressed at a national level?
Oh, you're absolutely correct. Your characterization of the problem. I think now it has become a sovereign problem. So it requires the collective attention of the executive and also national treasure. What are the manifestations of this problem? And you have touched on them. Let me just expand on those. So if you look at the trend line in relation to municipal debt to ESCOM. So
yes,
I'm talking about the totality of municipalities in this country. The period under review, so the financial year. So that financial year, remember, Pimelo, what they got to be presented today is the 1st of April 2023, ending March 2024.
Yeah.
So for that period, the municipal debt sits at 74 billion. Today, as I speak to you now, as I speak to you real time, is sitting at 95 billion.
That's an escalation
of 20 billion rents. And we have seen that once we start to average it, it grows by about 3 billion rents per month. So that's the proportions.
A month.
And what this is going to do, and of course, the trend line, I mean, if you look at the objective factors, and I'll come to what those factors are, suggest that this trend line will continue unabated.
Yes. Yeah.
And in fact, I've been the other side of the fence as a mayor, so I have some degree of appreciation of
the
what
challenges
it takes to run a municipality. So I know, for an example, that the month of December and January, that increase will likely be greater
than 3 billion. Yeah.
So why is that the case? First is that your consumer has got other priorities.
Yeah.
Ki December boss, if you know. So
pressure,
and then you relegate your utilities to the bottom. And then we know also for municipalities, the little that they are going to collect, they have to pay bonuses now. So there's pressure on the municipal finances. And then when you transition into January, schools are reopening. You are spending most of your money in December.
Yeah.
You are going to defer that to January.
Yeah.
I'm saying I can come back to you now. That increase will not be 6 billion in the next 2 months. It's likely going to be about 8 billion rand and continues to grow. What does that do? That what it does, it erodes the ability of ESCOM to recover as a result of the fiscal support. Remember, there's 254 billion rand that's going to come in tranches. So the 78 billion rand is a loan.
Yeah.
And then Eskom must satisfy a particular requirement. It has met those requirements. Mm-hmm. Then it gets to be converted into equity.
Yeah.
What that does, it reduces the cost of servicing the debt.
Yeah.
But that is going to be eroded as a result of the increases on municipal debt. But also
the capital on debt. Yeah.
Yes, and also the Eskom's own consumers. Remember, we ran that campaign of the transition, the KRN2. So what has those that revealed, Pimel? The following, that now we're able to confirm. So we've known, but we've confirmed now 2.1 million customers, just Eskom customers. I'm not talking municipal customers. And then we know from our own evidence, if you trace the average spend of a household that is low income, they spend about 1,200 rands per month on purchasing electricity.
Mm.
Multiply by 2.1 million customers, that comes close to about 2.5 billion. That's about 30 billion rands that Eskom is losing. These are what you call zero buyers. What are zero buyers? Zero buyers are those people who have not bought any electricity for the past 12 months.
Mm.
So the queues that we are seeing, the great majority, I'm not suggesting all, the great majority that is people who have not purchased electricity for the past 12 months. So it places a disproportionate burden on those who are paying.
Yeah.
Because remember what that happens. If you look at the tariff computation, the, what you call the allowable revenue, what NERSA looks at is there's a component there of debt that is irrecoverable.
Mm.
And Eskom says, I've tried everything, so I want the consumer to pay. So what that means is that, Pimelo, you are paying, you are diligent, you have been paying, myself, Sputla Ramkhoba, has not been paying, and then that component, part of what I'm not paying, finds its way into the tariff, and then you are going to pay double.
It.
You are paying for me. And I'm suggesting that there's a dispensation in this country. There were people on that queue, a great majority, elderly, unemployed. Of course, there's a dispensation to give them free basic electricity. They don't have access to that because of two things. First, they chose to bypass, but secondly, municipalities don't have a robust indigent register to keep on updating and passing it on this benefit to a low-income household. Let me give you a sense. National Treasury, through a grant dispensation, provides about 10 million households that qualifies for FBE, but only 2 million receives that. There's 8 million that are not receiving it. So, but the money receives, the municipality receives the money. Then they get to plug other holes and they don't get to pass it through. So that's the challenge that is confronting us, Pimel.
You're absolutely spot on when you say it's a sovereign problem.
Yes.
Because we can talk about the municipalities, and we've had those conversations with them about why they're not gearing up the system so that they can deal with indigent families. Because sometimes they will tell you, we've been there, we've signed the forms, we've gone there, and then after some time we go back, our forms are lost, and so on.
Yes.
So it goes on. But there are other problems as well.
Yes.
You have new township developments that sit for not a year, not 2 months, for years without them being properly registered in the system. Meaning, if you're going to get services, you'd have to know that I exist, right? If I don't get a bill, then you're not going to recover the money, even if I want to be.
Yes, you're absolutely correct, spot on. I'm impressed by your understanding of the nature of the problem. Well, I can imagine someone in your space will do a significant research. There are suburbs in this country, and not just new suburbs, but old suburbs that are not being built.
Yes,
and it's not out of the reluctance of the people in those suburbs not to pay, but they're just not receiving a bill.
Absolutely.
You know, as late as just about 2 weeks ago, I was traveling to Cape Town.
Yeah.
This lady comes, well done to you and the team for the excellent.
Yeah.
How, but Ramkhub, I'm not receiving
it.
But what I do, I'm putting it aside. How did they arrive at that figure? I'm just making an assumption.
So it's a
person who says and told me where the suburb is. I've, of course, communicated with the relevant authorities there.
Mm.
So that's something that we call completeness of billing.
Yeah.
And then the second problem you have even with those that gets to be built, municipalities do estimations.
Absolutely.
So it's not accurate, it's not spot on. Mm. And then there's a whole issue of queries and the like. The third problem that you have, even those that they get to be built and are built accurately and they choose not to pay, even though they can afford to pay, the municipality does not affect their credit control.
Yes.
So you can see with the kind of leakage that you have. And then you have something that we call technical losses. So technical losses simply means that you have not refurbished your infrastructure. You buy in bulk, but some of it gets to be lost on the way as it makes its way towards to your house, the end consumer. And then the last part is what you and I refer to as is in your those who connect illegal.
Yeah.
You know, there was a suburb that was being disconnected. I chose to go there because I really want to understand this problem. And the people were saying, Minister, reconnecting. Of course, there are issues around planning issues, whether this is an established township, but people are already there. And so that's the other problem we have. And then we know that this problem gives birth to the latest problem we have. Because of the burden that is placed on the distribution infrastructure. So just take your street at home. So that street, you share a transformer.
Yeah.
That transformer, how we determine the capacity of the transformer is a function of our assumed consumption. And that there's a science behind that.
Yeah.
It's about in this area, we know that the average household, and then we compute the number of houses. If there are five, then this is the capacity. But we over-design. We create additional capacity. And then what the Ramkhopa family chooses to do
order
to supplement the income, then Rinaleva here, backyard dwellers. And then they connect, they draw from this, and then it places additional burdens on this capacity of the the transformer can carry it. If the transformer can carry it, it calls on its defense mechanism, it switches itself off. But in some instances, it just explodes. So what do municipalities do? To avoid the explosion, because once it explodes, you must replace
problem,
it.
Yeah.
Then they do what we call load reduction. But then remember, the people who are drawing from that transformer, Ramkhopa doesn't pay Mutene pays. There is no technical, if you like, solution to isolate the Mutenes. You are drawing from that. And Ramkhopa is not paying. So we just switch you off. There are people, I'm sure, who can... will call you right and say, but Narapatela, why Navanziela? It's because you are connected to that Ramho. That's something that we need to address going forward. We are fashioning solution. I'm making this point because, Pimen, there's a lot of people listening, and then I'm going to make the claim, and I can substantiate it, that we have not had load shedding over an extended period of time. But they will call and say, Ramho, call it by any name, on any given day.
I'm load.
There are hours where I don't have electricity. If it's a load shedding, if it's a load reduction, which is true. So the experience is the same. You can come with a colorful language, technical language, but that's the bottom line. And that's something that we need to address. So it's not the issue on your overall generation capacity being unable to meet aggregate demand, but it's isolated downstream to that street, to that suburb, where you have these challenges, Pina.
I'm curious, Minister, that you have this drive now where you will have to keep talking about how every one of us is responsible for where we need to go and where we are. I'm curious whether, even at cabinet level, at the executive level, there is an appreciation of how everybody's part is important. Because there will be someone who you've just spoken about, you know, Akhadi Bekrum. Right? But it gets far more sophisticated than that. It's a suburb that's given, you know, the go-ahead to build homes and compounds.
Yes.
And I decide I'm going to sell maybe a stand that used to accommodate four people. I sell it. I get the go-ahead to do an entire complex. Yes. And there's no upgrade on the system. And then obviously compromising everybody. There's got to be an appreciation of the fact that giving that family the go-ahead to build more units than the municipality, the suburb can carry. It's a burden not only on electricity, water, sewage systems, and the like.
Yes, yes, yes.
Somewhere along the line, is there an appreciation of how all of these things interconnect?
We are forced to think in those proportions.
Mm.
So you can see there's a manifestation on the water side,
yeah, absolutely,
which is even more severe. I'm saying more severe, not understating the impact of electricity. But electricity, what the rich can do, they can buy a generator. What the poor can do, can get the firewood. Mm. I'm just saying at the extreme.
So, yeah.
What do you do when you don't have clean potable water? I think that's very extreme. So we can see there's an interconnectedness of all of these things. And guess what? All of them are finding expression at the local government level.
Yes.
So you need to invest the right capacities at that level. What has tended to happen in the country is that, and I'm saying this with the greatest of respect, and I'm sure that your listeners can vouch to this, in many parties, so those that can make it on the list of parliament or MPLs in the provincial legislature, so they get to be, in inverted commas, they dump to local government. Let me give you a sense. I mean, if you take Johannesburg, you are 8 metros. They are the primary drivers of the South African economy. They account for over 60% of the total GDP. They are home to over 80% of the population of this country. If you go to major developed countries or countries like China, because it's not categorized as a developed country, they still say developing, you'll see they are best of the best gets to run these financial hubs, economic engines.
Absolutely.
And I'm not suggesting, I'm not casting any aspersions, by the way, with the incumbents now. But the point I'm making is that it's important that it should be a deliberate approach. The point you are making, it's a planning function. It starts at that level.
Yeah.
And of course, our ability to ensure that there's sufficient capacity on the bulk side for water, for sanitation, electricity, roads, schools, you mentioned them. So you will see now when the schools open, suburbs have grown, black people as a result of upward mobility have gone to
moved.
Is previously historic suburbs, which were predominantly African speaking, and they tell about this school next to me. It's only offering Afrikaans as a medium of instruction.
Mm.
And I think the conversations about the Bela has something to do with that. But I'm just saying it's also a planning issue. So you could be building more schools, directing people in the right areas and ensuring that there's a sufficient social infrastructure, public infrastructure to support the kind of planning that we are doing. You are absolutely correct. It all starts with planning.
You don't have to, accuse anybody of saying anything about the capacity in municipalities because it's all there. They themselves speak of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they speak of the difficulty of acquiring the right skills because government is not attractive right now. Eskom was just telling us about the fact that they've just brought in new skills at executive level. How difficult is it to hold on to really good talent in government? Because at some level, that's probably part of your problem. Not only hold on to good talent, but remunerate talent at the scale of the private sector.
I mean,
corruption becomes part of why, if you can't do it, then people are tempted at some level.
You're absolutely correct. So this is one of the things that we're lamenting. And we say that we need to design an incentive and recruitment and retention strategy to ensure that there's a greater appreciation that some of the challenges are becoming complex. Technology is evolving.
Yeah.
The requirements for someone to be able to discharge and prosecute these functions are at an elevated level. But we are also competing against the private sector and the international market, if you like. So it's important that we must remunerate people appropriately. So this cuts across all the three spheres of government.
Mm-hmm.
You are unable to get the right talent. But it's also some of our requirements. I mean, for an example, if I want to recruit tomorrow to be a DDG for planning, some of the requirements says you must have occupied a position
for 10 years.
But I know there's a Pimen there with some of the most creative and brilliant skills, highly qualified, of course, knowledge in the private sector. Yes, yeah. Innovative. But it's the nature of the bureaucracy. And I'm just saying that we should not accept this as a given. Mm. I think we must disrupt it. It's going to require that for us to be able to advance to the next level.
Minister Ramakgopa is my guest. We're going to be doing this all the way until 9 o'clock. I'm very happy to take your calls, by the way, on 086-000-0959. You can also send voice notes on 063-688-0959.
Kaya Talk.
Kaya Talk.
How much more
on the street
information does anybody need?
On the air.
Thank you so much for staying with us. I'm with Minister of Energy and Electricity, Dr. Kgosietsu Ramakgopa, and today Eskom announced its annual results. We'll talk about other things as well. Minister, just to take you back, when we were all in the heart of load shedding, we spoke about energy mixes a lot,
Yes.
And I see now with this current financial model that Eskom was talking to us about, and it wasn't necessarily in this fiscus, but when they forecast 10 years from now, they spoke about a 10-year forecast, there isn't a nuclear section budget allocation there. Why is that the case?
Well, first is to accept that we're talking of a mix. I think it's an important part.
Yes,
so it's not one technology over the other.
Yes, of course.
Of course, if you listen to the fundamentalists, those who are proponents of one technology over the other, they will insist that it's their technology and not
nothing
any
else.
Other technology. So we're talking of clean forms of technology going into the future. There is no country in the world, I repeat, there is no country in the world that is powered by solar and wind. It doesn't exist.
Yes, of course.
So I think it's important. And we are not about to be guinea pigs. So that's why we're talking of a mix. We've got our own natural endowments. Coal is a big part of that. Coal is going to constitute part of the base load going forward. Gas is going to be part of the base load going forward. Hydro that we're importing will be part, and nuclear will continue to be part of that. We've just had a 20-year life extension of unit number one at Quebec. We're confident about unit number two. We just started firing it now. I'm sure we'll get that 980 megawatts by early January, and then we're going through the licensing. We're confident we'll get the 20-year extension. And yes, what sits in the IRP 2019 talks about 2,500 megawatts of nuclear at the pace and scale that we can afford. So I've not discarded the nuclear. So what I will be doing myself is to announce a panel of internationally renowned experts. Remember that part of the challenges with regards to nuclear is that it was soiled by politics. So it's not about the technology. Give you an example.
Absolutely
just
not.
Very recently, Pimel, about a month ago, Germany could not generate the electricity from both solar and wind over a period of 12 days.
Yes.
What did they do? Yeah. They imported electricity from France.
Absolutely.
How is France generating electricity? Nuclear. So I'm just saying that it's important that we surface the facts. Mm-hmm. So it's about everything. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the IRP, solar and PV is going to have an exponential increase, but base load is part of our solution. I just returned from Japan, just to make the point last week. I sit with my counterpart. They say, no, we want coal.
That's it. The world still wants coal.
We want coal. They say, no, we have found a way. We are co-firing ammonia.
To clean it.
We are exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's why we are talking about clean generation technologies. Mm-hmm. So if coal, we can exploit it, and we are going to co-fire it with ammonia, we reduce compromise air quality, we don't release CO2, then so be it. You must exploit it. But we are emphasizing, you don't have a coal problem. You have an emissions problem. And if there's technology that allows you to do that, then so be it. Exploit it. Because the NOxes, the SOxes, the particulate matter is reduced, the CO2 is being captured. What is the problem? And that's what we'll be pursuing.
And if that's the attitude, then it kind of changes things a little bit in the sense that where you're decommissioning a plant because of its age and you have to, you don't necessarily have to decommission the mine too alongside it. So it does help you quite a bit because you would have to be sitting with those reserves now to decommission
mine too, and all of that.
That changes the mix quite a bit.
Yeah. But of course, there's a different, there's the other one way, there's another way. So when I sit with my counterparts, China, Russia and India.
Mm-hmm.
They've got coal-fired power stations of the same design, much older than ours. Then they asked me, Ramakgopa, I see that you are talking about decommissioning that. Ours is 80 years plus, but the efficiency levels are high.
Yeah.
The emissions are nowhere because you don't have a... So there's no relationship between age and performance.
Hmm.
I'm talking about coal-fired power station, not other things.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no relationship between the two. That's the point they are making. Say you invest in that technology and then you exploit your own endowment. And I'm the same person to accept that the share of renewables in the form of wind and solar it will continue to increase because we are talking of it. And guess, yes, you are right. We are talking of a mix. That's a let's not distort the conversation. And that's, of course, you get to be caricatured. You get to be assaulted in public because these are proponents. They just don't want to hear anything called coal. They don't want to hear anything called gas. They don't want to hear about anything called nuclear.
No,
our
right.
exploitation of our resources. But we must stand firm and say we are going to do all of the above without the undermining our international obligation in relation to the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions.
And depoliticizing the conversation.
Absolutely, yes. Thanks, Pime.
Jake's from Pretoria North is on the line, Minister. Yes, please, please put your headphones on. Jake's, thanks so much for calling. Good evening and welcome.
Great stuff. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for calling.
Wonderful. I'm fascinated by the Minister's understanding of the dynamics of electrical supply and stuff.
Yeah.
And I just want to add that is he aware that the Izinyoga, part of those, maybe some percentage of that comes from his own staff, yes. like Eskom. The guys are the ones that are doing the connections, the illegal connections and stuff. And the Eskom employees are not paying for electricity. I don't know how that happens, but then no Eskom employees paying for any electricity. And last but not least, I just want to thank him for his understanding of the whole thing. If he can just, you know, keep up doing a good job, I'm happy with it.
Thanks, Jakes. Thanks.
No, Jakes is up. Thanks, my brother, for the commendation. It helps, you know, when you make an effort. And I know when he says he thanks the minister, he really means he talked the full army of 42,000 plus men and women.
I knew you were
women.
Going to say that.
No, it's important.
And that's important.
You know, last week we were at Mata.
Yeah.
And I went to visit the workers who were injured.
Who were injured. Was it nine of them.
Yeah. You must see, my sister, they placed themselves at great risk to keep the lights on.
Absolutely.
So we had to go there. And I think I'll convey Jake's message.
Yeah.
Jake, you are absolutely correct. When I started PML, I made the point that part of the delay in the release of the audited annual financial statements has to do with this thing of leakage.
Yes.
And we have got cause reason to believe that some of it is internal.
Absolutely.
And I want to emphasize that the great majority of the 42,000 plus employees, honest, diligent, patriotic, committed, professional. But there are always you'll find these bad apples. He's absolutely correct. That the Eskom employees are not paying for electricity, I mean, I can't vouch for that. Mm-hmm. He has brought it to my attention. I'll pass it through. But yes, we have made that admission, and we think that I think that there are shortcomings in our own systems, and that's something that is receiving our primary our primary preoccupation.
I mean, you speak of the nine, and I wanted to talk about that. I do think it's quite we don't speak enough of those who are selfless in their
sister.
Dedication.
Yes.
I believe some of them, we've got one still in ICU,
On a ventilator, still in ICU. It's a very, very sad situation. Even those who have been discharged. I mean, second degree burn wounds. When I was there, I mean, I visited Matla and I saw the force of the blast. It's God's miracle that they were not on the way. You must see. I mean, it broke the walls, everything. What harmed them was. Remember, the preliminary results suggest that the steam pipe ruptured, and then it's at the 35 bar, and then the steam is 500 degrees Celsius. So you can imagine, they were boiling. God's grace, they were able to come out. Of course, we're still praying for a colleague who's still in ICU. What's the bigger point I'm making? As we sit here now, there are people who have placed their lives in danger. Yeah. They're in those power stations. As we'll be celebrating Christmas, New Year, and that they are at the station. Those are the unsung heroes and heroines.
The issue of security has come to the fore quite a number of times. Eskom speaks of more investment in trying to make sure that, you know, place plants are secure. That's one of the first things that you had to deal with. You feel more optimistic now?
Well, we're moving in the right direction. I can't make absolute statement and say that we have built sufficient guardrails and protections. But I think what has come out is that as a result of the new mood, the resurgence, our belief in the workers affirming them. There was a great amount of harm that was done by those who were there before. The immediate
morale.
The morale. When people were told they're incompetent, when people were told that they got there through connection, nepotism.
So
people just decided, okay, let's fold our arms. You know what to do, then proceed. And then it killed the morale. I mean, one of the things that we had to do was just the affirmation of what I called the ground. Just to say that, I mean, let me give you a context. In 2001, Eskom was voted the best electricity provider
in the whole world.
We beat the Americans, we beat the French. The Chinese were nowhere close. When I went to China after I was appointed, they went to their SOE, which is now the biggest nuclear provider in the whole world. They are the biggest and continues to grow. After the meeting, you know, the Chinese, very polite, they respect authority. The chair of the SOE says, but Minister, I don't know why you are here. And he says to me almost sarcastically that, do you know a place called Quebec? Of course, I'll know it because it's the only nuclear power state.
Yes.
He says, no, we used that template.
It's
we visited
yours,
you.
Yeah.
This is yours. Mm. I was at Vienna, the International Atomic Energy Association, the Deputy Director General. A Russian, you know, they are very direct. He says to me, what were you thinking?
Mm.
You know, they are very colorful how they speak. What were you thinking? Mm. The purple bed modular reactor. You are the ones who were at the cutting edge.
Mm.
Now there's 60 concepts at various stages of development. The genesis of SMR, small modular, is South Africa. You've invested 12 billion rand and you abandoned the project. Who does that? He asked me. Of course, I was short of answer. But being a politician, I wouldn't say I don't have an answer. I waffled my way, but I could tell her how much likely society. But yes, I mean, you could tell her. Yeah, there's. I mean, we had this, but we will come back. We'll come back. We are here. We have admitted that there's been some missteps. We should move in the right direction.
Security now sits at the office of the CEO. I'm told.
Yes, you are right. Yeah, I mean, I got diverted. Absolutely correct. I mean, you have seen over. They reported, I think, over 100 cases, 17 convictions. Mm. We want to do more, but I'm sure that we are on the right track. The message is out. And guess what? The majority of this intelligence come from the workers themselves and say, no, Ramukhopa there is busy with some shenanigans. Mm. It's because we have affirmed them.
Mm.
We have said to them, and the incentives that we have
and
introduced.
And feeling secure.
And feeling secure, yes, my sister. Yes.
Jabulani is in Zola. Good evening and welcome, Jabulani.
Hey, Sanbonan.
Yebo Baba.
Ow. Upetu, Godfather. Manje khona ba enimbiza ngalo passport.
Yes, Jabulani.
Sharp comrade.
Ngikhona Jabulani.
Sharp. No man, I just want to make some few points and one question.
Yes.
With the points, I just want to applaud you regarding the coal, to clarify the coal issue, because you know these, I'll call it straight, the white companies that want to discard coal. Which country is living without coal? Because now that in US, I think it was 102 coal plant that were opened last year and were forcefully from Biden, and you are protecting coal, which is good because you are saving jobs. Then secondly, I have a question about this presidential cartel that is milking Eskom. What are you guys doing about it? Because many people are afraid to do legitimate business in Eskom because of such. If I, as Jabulani, want to go and do a good service provider, be a good service provider in Eskom, I'll get a call from these guys who say, no, we want 30%, or do you know what's going to happen to you? So that's That's the second point. The last point is the clarity that you just made regarding nuclear. Nuclear is the future. Nuclear has forever been the future, same as coal. It's good that you are doing something great about it and protecting it, because many people will say, no, nuclear is expensive. Yes, it's expensive on the first phase, but once it hits the ball running, then generate money itself. Because remember, in Africa, we are number one regarding electricity. So we have to power certain countries. Thank you.
Thank you. Jabulani?
Oh, Jabulani is on the ball. So, I mean, on the nuclear part, he's absolutely correct that the kind of nuclear conventional technologies that the upfront capital costs are almost prohibitive.
Yeah.
And that's what the argument that others want to use.
Yeah.
But this the part they don't tell you, and Jabulani makes the point, what you call the levelized cost of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the life of this plant, nuclear is one of the most competitive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's take Kuberg, 40 years of uninterrupted safe operation.
Yeah.
The efficiency levels of nuclear, exceptionally high, and then also it's clean.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the taxonomy of what constitutes clean technology, the G20, not the one in Brazil, the one preceding that in India, now categorize nuclear as clean. Even the COP accepts that.
Yeah.
If you look at the British, they are saying it is the Chancellor of the Exchequer before the new administration of Keir Starmer makes the point that one in every 4 megawatts generated in Britain by 2050 will be coming to nuclear.
Mm-hmm.
There's a race with regards to small modular reactors, and we think it's going to bring down the cost of energy of nuclear. But that is agile. So what it means is that you don't have to use the kind of cooling technology. You can take it to anywhere in the world, in the country, closer to the load centers. The second point that Jabulani is making, very profound. 600 million people on the African continent don't have access to electricity.
Mm.
Africa is going to be the epicenter of growth and manufacturing.
Mm.
And you can see the two world powers are fighting.
Mm.
That's an opportunity for Africa to occupy.
Mm.
We are the most industrialized of all countries on the continent.
Yeah.
We've got the skills, the capacity, the capability, the technology, the know-how.
Mm.
I think we are at the cusp. We are at the right place, so we must exploit that.
Mm.
And then we can ensure that in the context of regional connectivity, we
mm-hmm.
continue to support not just SADC,
mm-hmm.
but go beyond just the SADC boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
So we can be, if you like, the hub of energy generation on the continent.
Mm-hmm.
And if you bring the potential possibility of domestic gas to power solutions, then we are there. I mean, with the kind of technologies that we have. Of course, other countries are not folding their arms.
Yeah.
Egypt is building about 4 reactors now. They are going to be to surpass us once
yes,
they finish
they,
in terms of nuclear generation. But I was saying to my counterpart in Egypt that no, they will not be the leaders in relation to nuclear technology. What people don't know is that nuclear for medical purposes, to detect and treat cancers, the isotopes are manufactured here in Pelindaw. Our biggest market, the biggest buyer of this technology, is the United States of America. So we are advanced, far advanced as a country. We're just undermining our ability. We are going to unleash the potential of nuclear, not just for power purposes, but for non-power solutions, and also participate in the nuclear fuel cycle. We can grow the economy of this country, the kind of skills that we have. We have produced the most nuclear scientists of any country on the continent for obvious reasons, leading in the world. If you go to the Gulf states, those who are building those nuclear power stations, if you go to the U.S., the SMR development, who are the people at the forefront? It's South African engineers.
I'm going to take a quick break, and then when I come back, I've got calls, I've got voice notes, and Minister, we don't have much time. I don't know if 10 minutes is not enough time. Maybe we'll ask you for more time. Let me take a quick break.
Point on. Discussing the world around you.
Let's talk about it.
Hiya, 959. On the street.
On the air.
We continue our conversation with the Minister of Electricity and Energy, Dr. Kgosietso Ramakgopa, who's in studio with us, very graciously agreed to come to us on our very last day. Let me quickly go to Mason in Tsakane. Mason, good evening and welcome.
Good evening. How are you, Pamela?
Good, good. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well on this lovely rainy Thursday.
Excellent. Welcome.
Yeah. Pamela, I just want to say thank you to yourself and your distinguished guest for actually allowing us to understand the dynamic of everything, you know, especially you know, there were a lot of things that as an ordinary citizen that we did not understand. Mm. So I just want to say thank you for being able to allow us and to actually explain it in layman's terms, you know. Mm. I just have a question for our distinguished guest. As an ordinary citizen in my own little corner, in my own little space, what is it that I can do that can benefit the greater good?
Is that a question, Mason?
Yes, what a lovely question, Minister.
No, thank you very much, Mason. I think there's a lot that we can do. So first is for those of us who are in a position to pay for what we are consuming, the utilities, I think we have an obligation to pay for those services. And then the second one is that when we talk about the energy mix, one of the things that we're looking at is to ensure that we have what we call the behind-the-meter intervention or solution, Mason. By that, we mean rolling out solar PV for self-generation. Now we've got about 6,000 or 5,900 megawatts of electricity that is generated by rooftop solar solutions. And the reason we went this route, of course, had to be to do a lot with the kind of crisis that was confronting us. But we also learned from the Vietnamese. When they were faced with a similar problem, they introduced a set of incentives. And over a period of 12 months, they were able to get 8,000 megawatts generated by rooftop solar. What that does, and of course, they created a legislative dispensation that made it possible that for any excess generation, so when the sun is hot, you are generating more, you consume, and the difference, you can feed it back into the grid, and then for that you get a fee. So essentially the return on investment is quicker because you are able to earn annuity over a period of time, and then you are also able to assist with the grid, and we are bringing clean green electrons. We get to account for those and then we distribute them to if you like the energy intensive users such as steel manufacturers, cement manufacturers. Remember what the it's likely going to hit us, Pimelo, in the next 12 months. The Europeans are introducing something they call the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, in short, CBAM. What is CBAM in simple terms, just for our listeners? So you've got goods that have got their destination or their markets as in the European Union. What the European Union will be saying is to ask the question, how did you manufacture this good that is landing here? So let's say we are exporting steel. So they'll ask, how did you manufacture this steel? So if you are ArcelorMittal, employing 3,000 people here in the country, they say, oh, you produced it through the power from Eskom. 80% of any electricity generation is coal. Then they are going to levy a tax on that, and then you become uncompetitive. Yeah. You lose that market. Mm-hmm. Then you must lay off people. Yeah. So it's also in our interest to transition, to reposition ourselves as an economy that appreciates that you need to transition to cleaner technologies. Mm. Underline, I said clean. So if you are able to co-fire coal, use your natural endowments, you are able to co-fire it with ammonia, we are not releasing noxious toxins, particulate matter, we are not damaging the ozone layer, resulting in climate change, we are able to make the case, so we protect, if you like, our market share. But at the same time, we are exploiting our own endowments, and then we are able to produce a new economy in relation to ammonia. Remember, one of the things on this part, one of the assets we have in the country is the quality of the sun that we have. Mm. I mean, if you were to map what you call the irradiation atlas, just trying to understand the quality of the sun. By quality of the sun, I mean the number of hours in a day you have the sun and the number of days we have the sun. Mm. The best location is in the Northern Cape. Mm. Three other places, Chile and the Australians outback, they compete with us. But the nice thing with us is that we are able to connect the grid. So we are expanding our grid. That's a significant amount of asset that we must exploit and then the world is our oyster. We are able to build an economy on the back of this. And this is the kind of exploitation we want to pursue going forward.
I quickly want to ask you this, just as a citizen who sometimes doesn't understand. You spoke about depoliticizing some of the arguments and problems. You came in and to deal with, I'll call it a dispute for lack of a better word, between Eskom and municipalities in relation to who's owing who and how much, and there needed to be intervention and a mediation and all of that. It's highly frustrating for a citizen where now an external mediation process has to happen at a cost while we are all battling with, you know, the fact that we don't have enough money to do the things that we have to do. Do we have a sustainable plan where we can have both parties, in this instance, agree to a formula going forward once they've resolved what now is the tension between themselves about what they're currently owing each other?
You know, one of the best advantages I think I have is I'm an engineer, first and foremost, so we are trained to resolve problems. And I think it's a computational issue. So you have the one party that says, no, I'm disputing that I'm receiving so many megas from you. The other one is disputing that is dispatching so megawatts. So you simply meter the one side and meter the other side, you reconcile.
Yeah.
We have a body called SANEDI, which is in our camp, so we don't have to pay additional money. Neutral in inverted commas. These are engineers, and bring engineers on both sides. We recalibrate the meters, make sure that they're synchronized, and then we're able to confirm. If the issue is a money problem, then let's have that conversation. So don't muddy it in other things and say, and that's how we're going. You know, I'm moving from one municipality. We're at Tokoloho. We're at Emfuleni, Johannesburg, Tswane. I'm supposed to go to Enoch Mugijima, what do I say, Queenstown. We will not tire. We are going to resolve this problem. And I'm just saying what sits before us is an engineering issue. So the point we are making, I think what has been happening historically is that the politicization of this is also a function of not necessarily understanding what is the problem statement.
Yes.
So we have granularized the problem statement, and the kind of spectacular success that we are seeing has nothing to do with politics. It had everything to do with an engineering problem, and engineers resolved that problem. That's why I was at pains to explain. There is no relationship between the abatement of an attenuation of load shedding and the election. It's an engineering, it's a science. And that's what we've been doing. We'll continue to do that. Of course, the nature of energy globally is that by its very definition is political.
Of course.
Yes.
Let me take a quick voice note, Minister.
Hi, Kaya. Thanks for everyone for tuning in. We have a lovely guest today. Thank you so much, Minister, for joining us. My question is, seeing that majority of, well, I hate saying this, people in Soweto are not paying. Maybe there's like 10% or how many percent that's paying. Let's say there's 200 households that are willing to pay, no, sorry, 200,000 households that are willing to pay 250 rands a month just to at least pay something instead of carrying on like this. Wouldn't that help Eskom in any kind of way? I mean, 250 rands times 200,000 homes is like 50 million per month. Which, I mean, is what? It's a substantial amount compared to what they're getting now. Why are they not considering that option? That's my question. Sorry for the long voice note, but thank you so much for this lovely guest. This show is so informative, even in December.
I must say that we are piloting a solution.
Yes.
In Musina. So we've chosen two townships there.
Yes.
Musina has got, is very rich in terms of the sun. So we're doing, if you like, a solar intervention coupled with a battery storage.
Yes.
And then we're able to determine the unit cost of us rolling that kind of solution to a household. The preliminary results suggest that it's a spectacular intervention.
Wow.
So what we're going to do is to retrofit that in a more dense area. Remember, in Soweto, you a more build-up suburb, you might not be able to have a solar park. But one of the things that we have put forward, the city of Johannesburg, you've got mine dams.
Yes.
Mine dams are an asset. So if you come to think of it, so that's land that is lying dead.
Yes.
So essentially, you can roll out solar panel. Let's assume that you can't do that.
Yeah.
So in these areas, what we're looking to do is to do battery storage. But that battery gets to be charged not using solar, but using the grid. But you charge it during the day because energy is cheaper during the day.
Yes.
And you already have the IPPs that are generating electricity using solar. So essentially, you are benefiting from that. and peak when the electricity is expensive. You draw your electricity from the batteries. And then the conversation about the possibility of a flat rate is a real one. I'm not saying we're going there, but he's absolutely correct. Because what we need to do is to protect our revenue using our own natural endowments. I just made the point that the top three countries or jurisdictions in the world, the Northern Cape, Chile, and the Australian outback, have got the best quality of sun. I was in Japan. They make the same point. They're sitting on huge gold, endowments. Yeah. And of course, even if you look at Mosina, parts of the Cape, some parts of the Northwest, the quality of the sun, the irradiation is better than most of Europe. So we need to exploit our endowments. We are going that route. And I'm confident that you'll see we'll find a way of resolving this problem. It's not too complex for us to resolve going forward.
One last voice note.
I'd like to say thank you to the minister, because now obviously to find a problem you need to, like, life is like a hierarchy. So if only you're in the office, you don't understand what's going on the ground, then obviously there'll be manipulation of stats and there'll be no be reliable stats also. So going to the ground, I'd like to say big ups to the minister, because now you are aware that some are using uncapped electricity.
Just a quick one, minister. I certainly was, personally, I was very surprised by those queues that we saw. Where people just admitted to not having ever paid electricity in the past.
I was on the
queue,
I had this experience, it will forever be etched in my mind. So I go there. So I like talking to people who can say, I say, Mama, what you are, you Ramhop? Why didn't I want to? Before Umbut is, it's like a patel like a 2018. Of course, that's fine. We are here. Yeah. Let's look forward and see how best to address this. But the people who are the biggest casualties are the many listeners who sacrifice other priorities to pay for utilities. And then there's a Ramhopa who chooses not to pay. So the real casualty is that person, a diligent payer. They could be going out partying. Mm-hmm. They can... You could be buying the most expensive house, the most expensive car. They've toned down because they understand their obligation.
Yeah.
And others choose that, no, we're not just going to pay. 23 billion wiped off the income of Eskom. Municipalities, I can tell you, it runs close to 30 billion rand. And municipalities can't patch potholes, fix the roads, build clinics. And it's got significant repercussions. And I think it's about time that those of us can pay. And then we'll protect the poor, I want to emphasize.
Yes,
the state of the economy suggests that their households just simply cannot afford. We'll create that dispensation and support them.
You've told us that you're working on a plan to try and come up with a solution to assist or at least encourage those who don't pay to pay. I'm curious about that, because you don't really have much leg room to do anything to force me to pay if I don't pay you. Municipalities can. Maybe they can switch me off. And if they can isolate me, maybe they will. It's tough for you. You can't
you're
really
absolutely,
do that.
You're absolutely. If a Joburg, for one reason, is not paying, so is not paying.
Yeah.
Imagine if
the entire city,
then you are taking out 33% of the South African economy. That's why I'm saying it's a blunt instrument.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist for Eskom, that instrument. But working with municipalities, we are closer to finding that solution. I'll come on your show before the end of February, and you'll see by that time. I'll tell you this is the solution, and I'll give you the results of the two pilots. We are going to adjust it or adapt it to a more build-up area like Soweto. We are closer to the solution. I'm confident, Pamela.
The Free State is an interesting model. You know about the Free State.
Yes, they
are not very rich, but they're paying. They're better payers than many cities. I'd like to see what's going on there. But we'll talk about that when you come back.
Thanks, Sissy.
Minister Ramhopa, thank you for making time for us. Have a fantastic festive season.
Oh, thanks to you.
You deserve the rest.
All the best to the listeners. We'll make sure that you have a Merry Christmas. The lights will be on. If you choose to have a candle Christmas, it's not because of load shedding. It's because we have made the choice. But happy, blessed, and joyful festive season to everyone.
To yourself, to your team, to the teams at Eskom in your department, please pass our heartfelt, thank you.
for what they do. And I specifically want to mention and isolate the guys on the ground who make sure that everything actually happens. They don't necessarily sit in aircon offices, but they make this whole machine work.
Absolutely.
And I really appreciate you coming through.
Thanks
this
once more, Pina.
Thank you very much.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.